This wasn't just another day. The silent signs were pulling me away. And everything might not be what it seems. Cause the nightmares keep calling me. I knew this wasn't the right way to go. I care less what to learn than what I know. And I can only see this in my dreams. Cause the nightmares keep calling me. I think I lost my way.
All right. Dun, dun, dun. Welcome to the Nine of Swords, the cruel heart of Gemini. Middle decan of a mutable sign. And this is one that people are so frightened of, inevitably. You know, the phrase, you have nothing to fear but fear itself. Well, fear is friggin' scary. Right? It's known as the Lord of Cruelty or Despair and Cruelty. And I think despair is like cruelty towards yourself in a way, right? It's the mind, the swords hanging like the sword of Damocles over your head, that feeling of impenetrable dread. Cruelty is people turning their swords against you. Despair is like turning your swords against yourself.
Yeah, cruelty can be turned against yourself.
True.
Too. Self-inflicted pain.
Absolutely.
Also, and rage, malice, pitilessness, revenge, suffering, misery, etc.
Woohoo! And also, I think it's true that cruelty from others creates cruelty towards self as you're growing up. And then cruelty towards self creates cruelty towards others. It's a cycle. Cycle of abuse, alas. Just to review, we are again in the suit of swords. All swords are related to the fool in one way or another. His journey of wayfinding, where he began with the crossroads, with the Libra cards, 2, 3, and 4 of swords, with the navigation of the 5, 6, and 7 of swords, and the Aquarius cards, and then with the Gemini cards, 8, 9, and 10 of swords, we are at the moment of choice, the final choice. We talked in the 8 of swords about decision paralysis, or the proliferation of options, and how difficult that position is for people. And now we're at the 9 of swords, where you have to kill some off. You have to prune away. You have to do some process of elimination, like it or not. Among these 3 fearsome cards, I think it's probably fair to say that even more so than the 10, this one's really the hardest to bear in a lot of
ways. It
is,
yeah.
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 And that would be due to the presence of our friend Mars.
Mm-hmm. And also the fact that it's the penultimate of the suit, which often is like the fullness of it before it just collapses like a souffle.
Yeah, there's a real moment of
in the 10.
With the 9, it's a very powerful moment. It's where the forces are concentrated, really peaking before they become overripe in the 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. And especially because, you know, the 9 is this place of power of the imagination, and the suit of the swords is all about that sort of constructs of the mind. I think this is, you know, a really incredibly powerful place, and why our fears and projections have such a hold over us. So Mars, in the sign, the 10 to 19 degrees of Gemini, the middle decan of Gemini. So in those myths of the twins we talked about, in each one there was a death. Castor dies, is that right?
Yes.
He's the mortal one. And where Abel dies because he's murdered, we have the act of violence takes place here.
And in the 10, unfortunately.
And in the 10, kinda,
yeah. There's a lot of violence in the 10 as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's some premeditation involved in here.
Exactly. This might be the planning of the murder. The 10 is the deed.
Yes, could be. This is the intention that goes before the crime that makes it a murder rather than just manslaughter. So Mars cards, generally, there are more Mars cards than more Mars minors than any other, because we begin and end astrological year with Mars in Pisces and Mars in Aries. But here we are in Mars in Gemini. So the other 5 cards of Mars are Mars in Aries, the Lord of Dominion, the 2 of Wands. Then we have this one, the Mars in Gemini, the Lord of Cruelty, the 9 of Swords. Then we have the Mars in Leo, the Lord of Valor, the 7 of Wands. Then we have Mars in Scorpio, the Lord of Disappointment, the Five of Cups. Then we have Mars in Capricorn, the Lord of Work, the Three of Discs. And finally, we have Mars in Pisces, the Ten of Cups, the Lord of Satiety. So dominion, valor, work, satiety, disappointment, and cruelty. So, you know, we see all of the aspects of Mars, constructive and destructive.
Mars, who delights in destruction.
Yes. There's a line in the Orphic Hymn to Mars that says, "You who delight in spears and swords," right. You know, and the rest of it is just like, please
don't do it to me.
Don't do that. You know, right. Be the Lord of Work instead, right, the right. Three of Discs. Right. Turn yourself to the works of Demeter. But here's the meanest Mars of all, the biggest badass, the cruel warrior with his poison sword. So
I think of, you know, Mars in Gemini too as the sharp tongue.
Yeah,
know,
absolutely.
The cutting words.
The Simon Cowell. American Idol, is that it? Never watched that show, but
I don't know.
That's what comes to mind. So the time of year again is June 1st to June 10th. I dated someone with that birthday. God, he was a talker. Broke my heart in high school. June 1st to June 10th, as we said in the 8th episode, these cards of Gemini are an ending of a kind because this is the last lengthening of the light until we get to the solstice.
Yeah.
On June 20th.
Which will happen in the next card.
Which will happen in the next card and transfer over to the Two of Cups. So, you know, and we talked actually in the Two of Cups quite a bit about that moment. But we can cover it again in the Ten of Swords because it's interesting. The associated majors are the Tower, dun, 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 and the Lovers. So I just love this combination. There's something that's so powerful and obvious about it.
It's like a destruction by choice.
Right. Those who have never pulled their majors out, you know, to go with their minors should really do it for this card because it totally explains the nature of the Nine of Swords. If you take the Tower and the Lovers, it makes it super obvious why the Nine of Swords is the way it is. If you think about the Tower and the Lovers alone for a moment, that can be a really powerful metaphor for the breakup of a relationship, mm-hmm. especially one that was bound to break up. Like if there was an affair or something, if you think of the 8, the 9, the 10 of Swords, followed by the 2 of Cups, there's a story in there that is really familiar to me because starting at age 20 or so, I had the experience, which I would have a few times in my life, of being in love with two people at the same time,
ew.
Which is terrible, right?
That
it doesn't
horrible.
Seem like something. It must be in my chart somewhere. It's just a thing that happened. And the 8 of Swords is a good representation of the discomfort of being confronted by too many choices and that not being a good thing at all, you know, but being really unhappy about it and feeling powerfully torn. And then the 9 is where you commit in one direction or the other, but you're going to hurt somebody and it's going to be really ugly and really bad.
It's going to hurt you too.
Yeah. And it's going to hurt you too. Or it might be the revelation of the affair, mm-hmm. you know, or the moment of uncovering that when everybody gets hurt and then is the reaping the consequences of it. And then there's a total collapse in Ten of Swords. And you have to kill off one in order to be able to love again, which is the Two of Cups, right? So there's that progression, you know, in the best case, you successfully recognize the problem for what it is. You move on. You are able to commit to a relationship again. That's the Two of Cups. Or you recognize that the problem was you the whole time and both relationships died and you're left with nothing. So that's a Ten of Swords ending.
Yep.
So if you ever wanted to like illustrate an unsuccessful love story, that's one way to do it. And I think that like another way to tell that story is the fall from Eden, right? You know, the 8, 9 and 10 of Swords. We talked a little bit about it in the 8, the decision, do we take this step? The 9 is taking it, and the 10 is the fall.
That reminds me of a William Blake quote that I think really fits here, is that we should go to heaven for form and to hell for energy, but marry the two.
Oh, that's great. To heaven for form
And to
but
hell,
to hell for energy.
To hell for energy and marry the two. So that's that speaks a lot about this card, you know, with the lovers and the marrying.
Yeah.
And the heaven and hell, the Gemini dichotomy, polarity.
Yeah.
Reconciling the two halves of the self. Or,
what a great quote. Yeah. What's it from? Do you happen to remember?
I don't remember what it's from, but it's William Blake.
Well, he was one mad genius, all
that's
right.
That's for sure. Yeah.
He's great.
I'm a fan.
Yeah. And I think that, like, there's a real presence in this card of both the cruelty that you do to others, but as we talked about, and the cruelty that you do to yourself can be a guilty conscience. You know, mm-hmm. the waking up in the middle of the night like, oh my God, what have I done?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. This is interesting. I think that, like, guilt and shame both reside in this card, perhaps. You know, I'm trying to think if they reside anywhere else. But I certainly would see them in this card.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in the Five of Cups as well, another Mars card.
Oh, definitely. It's, you know, it's a harsh thoughts card.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, guilt, I think, is in some ways a productive emotion because it helps you to rectify whatever it was.
It shows you where you're on the wrong path.
Right. Mm-hmm. But shame is less so because it only is directed against yourself. It only prevents you from moving forward.
Yeah, so, it's not constructive.
Yeah. Those two kinds of self-cruelty, I think, have a difference and can both be represented in this card and might represent a key for how to deal with it. Except the guilt, but not the shame.
Yeah.
I suppose we could talk a little bit about the very interesting Kabbalah correspondences.
Why not?
Let's see. Although we were talking about Mars and Gemini astrologically, we're talking about the ninth Sephira, Yesod, the sphere of the moon in Yetzirah, the world of formation. Now, that's really interesting, right? Because here you are on the astral plane in Yesod, the place of the blueprint, and you are in Yetzirah, the world of imagination, the world of formation where things are designed, and you have this power to create your reality. It really says something that Yesod of Yetzirah, Nine of Swords, you know, it says something about the human condition that what we create are nightmares.
Yeah.
The sixth day Yesod is the creation of humans.
Oh.
Go figure.
Of course. Yeah. Cain.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about also Yesod as being associated with the moon.
Yeah.
You know, that emotional component, the root of primal emotions. And then you add Mars to it, aggression, and and Gemini, Mercury to it, the mental. So it's like mental aggression causing a primal emotional response.
Right.
Kind of like what Crowley said about this card as being an automatic string of heartless passions.
The cliche that people always say about this card, that what's good about it is that it's only in your mind. You know, that's also what's bad about it. And,
right.
You know, and the way out of this card, I think, is like, number one, it's only in your mind. Number two, it's in Yesod. If it's in Yesod, that means that you can change it.
Yeah.
Right?
The whole free will
thing. Flexibility of the moon and the free will of Gemini.
And sometimes there are things that might come up with this card that, you know, you can't really change, but it's your mental attitude that counts, even in times of despair and trouble.
Right. No matter what happens, there's always a better and a worse way to respond.
Yeah.
Right.
So you almost have to resign yourself to it and say, okay, I'm going to go through this.
Mm-hmm.
But how I think about it and talk to myself about it is important.
It is the most important thing.
Exactly.
Because Yesod is translated as foundation. So how you deal with that structure, that imaginal structure, how you deal with the situation will create your reality.
How you frame it to yourself.
Right.
Yep.
So, you know, fix the fear, you fix the reality.
Yep. That reminds me. So in the eight, I mentioned that for these three decans, I decided to write a three-word spell.
Yeah.
And for this one, it's hear no fear.
That's so great. Yeah.
Because this card is a lot about fear, you know, and how to go through it.
And
because this is a Mars card, you know, the antidote here to fear is courage. You know, Mars, that's Mars's virtue is bravery
is
and courage.
Facing it.
Yeah.
Right. And I think
facing it head on, going into battle, even if you're going to get killed, you know?
Yeah. I think there's a real story, and we haven't really done this with the other nine cards, but I was thinking about this yesterday when I got Nine of Discs, that, you know, there's always a story in the nine that's kind of a culmination of the 3-6-9 sequence. So if you look at the heartbreak of the three, mm-hmm. the consequence of avoiding it is what comes up in the nine, right? If you run away from it, if you try to pretend it's not there, then you're going to get the nine. And only through, you know, through facing it, through balancing it, maybe through the action of the six, I don't know, that mm-hmm. might be one way to look at it. Are you going to take that fear that came return to you threefold and conquer it and move on? The nine is the fruit of the three in some ways. The gifts of Saturn.
Yeah, it's interesting. The nine is 3x3.
Exactly.
Triple the three. Oof.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
I mean,
I think Jimi Hendrix said, three times the pain with your own self to blame.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you think about that, you know, take three wands of virtue and multiply that and you come out with strength, you know, take three cups of abundance and you multiply that, you get happiness.
Pain. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then, yeah, three discs of work,
you will gain,
reap
right?
gain. And, yep. You know, and.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Three swords of sorrow and you will reap cruelty.
Right.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then we also talk about how I think in Yetzirah, we have the portion of the soul known as the Ruach, right? It's Crowley who says that this is where the Ruach consumes itself. Mm. You know,
that's really interesting. The wording consumes itself for this card because, the tower, pay, the mouth.
Yes. So Hebrew letter pei translates to mouth.
Corresponds to the tower. And that's
right.
This card.
Right. The hell mouth.
Yep.
Yep. Chomp, 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 chomp.
Tasty self.
Oh, yeah. Remind me.
Give me more of your ego.
Talk about when we get to your card. Okay, so that's a little bit about the Kabbalistic overtones of this card. So the Deccan significations. All right, what's the image from Picatrix?
A man whose face is like an eagle and head is covered by linen cloth, clothed and protected by a coat of leaden mail, and on his head is an iron helmet, about which is a silk crown, and in his hand he has a bow and arrows.
Got it. Right.
A lot of Mars symbols in there.
There are.
You know, the eagle is sort of martial, sort of Aries. The head, the iron helmet, silk mm-hmm. crown. Crown is, again, the head, Aries, Mars. A lot of weaponry, a lot of armor.
Yeah, but on the other hand, you have, like, protection, linen cloth, silk crown. Mm-hmm. There's sort of a schizoid nature to this.
Totally.
So it's almost like the dual nature is in one person here. Mm. And then in Agrippa's deck and image, you have a man in whose hand is a pipe and another man being bowed down digging the earth.
Is the pipe a lead pipe or a smoking device?
That makes a big difference, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
I'm just thinking because of the period when it was written, it's probably smoking.
Probably.
So, you know.
Right. That, yeah, I guess that makes more sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a pre-industrial age.
Pre-plumbing.
So. Oh, well, no, the Romans had plumbing.
Right, but yeah. Aqueducts and such.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what Austin says about the Deccan images is that they're just like really, you know, they're mm-hmm. all over the place, which is normal for this face, actually.
Right. Well, this face is considered to be schizoid, actually.
Totally,
you know,
schizoid. Yeah.
It's the, you know, fanatics and psychopaths card.
the significations make that pretty clear. Infamous and dishonest agility as that of jesters and jugglers. So that's like that
Mercury,
mental,
and that's
mental
also Mercury,
prestidigitation. Yeah. It also signifies labors and painful searching.
Mm, yeah.
Oppression, evils, and subtlety. So that suggests like that critical self-examination, like when you're flagellating yourself to see what you did wrong.
Yeah,
you know, that sort of like autopsy that you do, you know, in your head.
Oh,
when,
oh my God, what did I say?
Why did I say that? Yeah, exactly. That process of self-recrimination. This sort of ties in with one of the odder cardomantic meanings that goes with this, because apparently this was associated with some religious aspects like religious obedience, virginity, celibacy, priests, monks, friars, you know, monasteries, seclusion. So, you know,
self-flagellation.
Exactly. That's what I got out there. I was like, you know, there's a very sort of Christian
the hair shirt
punishment thing going on, you know, the sort
bed
of like,
nails.
Yeah, abasement of the self thing. And, you know, and I guess this is the church's way of trying to, by mortification of the flesh, you get to connection with the divine. But all I see here is punishment.
Yeah.
Like for the sin of being human. You know, but that is an interpretation of the time. And the isolation that's native to those definitions, the celibacy, monastic seclusion, that has a lot, I think, to do with the way the sword of the lovers and the separation of the tower can cut people off from one another and from themselves mm-hmm. as well. In the Rider-Waite, you're going to see, you know, someone who's really very much on their own. So Atea had all of those meanings with the religious implications in his upright definitions. And then the reversals, justifiable distrust, well-founded suspicion, legitimate fear, mistrust, doubt, conjecture, disgrace, shame, all of those. Cardomantically, this card, the Nine of Spades, actually can mean death, especially if you get it with the Queen of Spades, if you're a woman, or the Jack of Spades, if you're a man. You know, the Queen of Spades has a very morbid reputation, generally.
Interesting. I would have thought that more of the 10, because the 10 often actually...
You'd think
actually,
so, right?
Well, the 10 actually... Sometimes yeah. means literal death. You know?
You would think so. Yeah. The occultists seem to fight a lot over whether it's literal death or not. But yeah, so in terms of playing card lore, this one's a pretty dark one.
Yeah.
Nines in general, I think, you know, nine is the ultimate number of magic. So I think that one way to look at this, because of its position in the astral plane, Yetzirah, all the stuff we were talking about, is this could be like the card of self-fulfilling prophecies.
Mm.
You're making your own worst fears come to pass.
Right. Through the power of thought and words.
You know, it really reminds me of the threefold law in Wicca. Whatever you do comes back three times.
Yeah.
Yeah, so do no evil. All right, so shall we look at Rider-Waite?
Sure.
Okay, lovely card.
The bedspread's nice.
The bedspread is nice, and I think that that's meaningful.
Did you notice that the bedspread has astrological glyphs all over it?
I did, yeah. And I kind of thought...
And roses? Is that roses? Mm-hmm. Are those
roses,
other?
I think.
I think roses and astrological glyphs.
Right, and I was sort of thinking that this is sort of like looks ahead to Malkut in a way. You know, sort of here's the whole world represented by the zodiac and the roses of Malkut. And it's sort of like a relationship between the dream world of Yesod and the reality of Malkut.
Yeah, that's coming.
Yeah, yeah. And it's almost like, you know, it could be a sort of like a commentary on, you know, the fearful world of the mind that you are in versus the real physical world that is protective in some way. You know, reality, the security blanket.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, the security blanket of Malkut.
Never heard it described that way.
Well, that's a new one. But yeah, I kind of want this cover, this quilt, actually.
Well, you can make one.
Yeah, that's true.
Embroider me one.
How hard could it be? The nine swords.
It might give you nightmares.
Might give you nightmares, yeah. But it shouldn't, is the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
The nine swords hanging sideways, that's really interesting because they're not literally a threat to the person. But they also remind me of the sword of Damocles a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, hanging over. Some depictions, you know, certainly the Thoth one, but there are others where they're hanging down, which seems like much more threatening somehow. I think it's significant that the blades are pointing to the right. It's sort of like your fears are all about looking into the future,
mm-hmm.
projecting them onto the future, you know, the right as the future.
Although a lot of times in Rider-Waite, the future is actually to the left because of the Hebrew letters of the divine name going in that direction, in which case perhaps it's, you know, looking back at the past and feeling that guilt and shame that you talked about.
And also, I think it's just the placement of the swords, but it looks almost like they could be intertwined.
Yeah,
you know?
Almost woven together.
Yeah, and I think that that reminds me of the patterns of the mind, the way one thing you think of leads to another, and it's all connected into one horrible pattern.
And it almost looks like a warp and a weft.
Yeah, it does. It looks
like
a lot
like a weaving. So it's almost like your thoughts are weaving, you know, creating your reality, weaving your reality.
Yeah, it looks a lot like the pattern of warp and weft you put on your fortune card, actually, to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what's up with that illustration?
Ah, the famous illustration.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't have a good resource for looking up things like that. But when I just looked at it myself, it's almost like, well, they're obviously battling figures. So Mars. So it's like showing the one figure is like overpowering the other one that looks like they're kind of surrendering and they're about to kill him. So it's
that's
the cruelty.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. There's two different interpretations of this.
And then two people, twins. So, you know.
Exactly.
Conflicting dualities, you know, and being mentally torn over them.
Right. The reference here, one of them is to the myth of Cain and Abel. If you look at the card, I'll pull it down for a second. Maybe we can get a closer look. It could be a sword, but there's a version of Cain and Abel.
It looks like a sword fighter's stance.
It does. It does look like fencers, actually.
Yeah,
it looks like like an on guard to me.
Yeah,
You know, not actually in the Bible itself, but in later interpretations of the Bible in medieval era, I think, there was a suggestion that Cain slew Abel with the jawbone of an ass. Have you heard that one?
Yep.
So there is this idea of the bone that was used as a weapon. And what Katz and Goodwin say in Secrets of the Waitsmith Tarot is that this card is a depiction of a scene from Romeo and Juliet, where Juliet wakes up. She talks about what will happen when she drinks the poison draft. This is the pretend poison draft that's supposed to make her look dead so that, you know, Romeo can come and get her. Only Romeo's not clued in on the plan. So, leading to tragedy for all concerned. She has this soliloquy where she says, "Oh, if I wake, shall I not be distraught, environed with all these hideous fears?" So that's her right there. "And in this rage, with some great kinsman's bone, as with a club, dash out my desperate brains." So, you know, here's like what she's imagining, you know, in the little panel under the bed. And that's from Act 4, Scene 3 of Romeo and Juliet. So she's projecting what her fear of what's going to happen when she wakes up from this draft of sleeping death, when in fact, it's even worse.
Interesting that Pollux was associated with poisons, that, and then in the Thoth card, there's drops of poison, you know, dripping down the card.
Right, right.
Well, I thought that was kind of interesting.
And that's just interesting that she chose that. I mean, she chose all these theatrical, you know, references generally when she was doing these cards.
The other thing that's a little bit subtle, but if you look at that quilt, doesn't it look to you as if the Aries is bigger than a bigger square than the others?
Just it kind of
slightly,
does.
Like it's emphasizing the Mars.
Yeah. Yeah. I never did notice that. I think you're right.
The other thing I think is that it seems like, you know, this is the Lord of Despair and Cruelty. It seems like the Waite version focuses on the despair angle of it, you know, with that, that imagery definitely looks like despair.
Yeah. Or it could be, you know, the fear of cruelty being done to you, the kind of nightmare you wake up from. Yeah.
Or self-inflicted cruelty, yes.
Right. This is definitely, you know, when people see it, they're like, you know, I haven't been sleeping. This is the thing that's troubling me. There's always, at least once a month, I get a client who sees this and is like, that's me.
Yeah.
Other things that we could pick up on is maybe like the whiteness of the garment, you know, could have something to do with the good intentions of the person. You know, we often see the white garment as representing purity of intention, but something has gone horribly wrong. Oh, Waite says this is a woman. He says, one seated on her couch in lamentation with the swords over her. She is as one who knows no sorrow, which is like unto hers. It is a card of utter desolation.
No rose at all is shown. The rose is utterly destroyed.
Right. And I think also like the hands over the face.
If you imagine it, that's a gesture of despair. But it's also like,
I don't want to see any more pain. Mm. Right.
Right.
I can't see anything good, and I don't want to see any more pain.
Mm-hmm.
The blackness of the background, black in general, we read it as being associated with death, but also in Rider-Waite-Smith, it's always worthwhile remembering that that's a fertile potential, and which I think really ties into the message of Yesod and Yetzirah, that you have the power to shape this moment into right. something different, should you choose to do that. Take hold of the swords and take control of the narrative. Also, that background really borrows from the background of the tower.
Yeah, the black background.
You know, if you look at the tower and the lover's card, there's a message about vulnerability in there. You know, you have fully clothed figures falling from the tower. You have naked figures in the lovers. And the person in bed is sort of in between, you know.
Yeah, in their night clothes.
In their night clothes. So they're yeah. vulnerable like the lovers, but they're somewhat protected. It also reminds me of like when you have one of those illusions of falling when you fall asleep. That what's that called? I forget. Hypnagogue,
yeah,
something
yeah,
or other.
Yeah.
And the tower can be like starting from that and
yeah.
waking up.
Yep.
Because you feel unsafe.
And you know, like, looking at that bed, I can see why they can't sleep.
It doesn't look real
thin
comfortable.
That mattresses.
Yeah. Yeah. Thin pillow. Well, it's sort of like the kind of bed you'd expect to find in an acolyte cell.
Yeah, you know? Right.
You know, one thing about the lover's card that people don't always get when they're first getting to know it is that although it's a special card, it's a exciting card, it's also one that's dangerous. And this is the danger that's associated with it, that you might fall, mm-hmm. right? We talked about the fool's journey and how he, you know, goes through this journey of choice, but in all of those nine cards of the error suit of the swords, I believe this is the only one associated with Mars. Is that right? Let's see, 2, 3, 4 of, we have 5, 6, 7 is again Saturn, Mercury, Moon. So yeah, this is the only one associated with Mars.
Yep.
So
it's super extra cutting sword.
Super extra cutting sword. And if you're going to fall off a cliff, this is where it's going to happen. If the fool is going to trip and stumble and fall and hurt himself, it's going to happen here in the nine. And then he'll be lying on the ground dead, like in the 10.
Right. Oops, fell on 10 swords.
Yeah. Those are the stories that you can unpack out of there. Lots of fun. On to the Thoth card. Oh, they look so nasty.
Mm.
Oh, God.
Yes, they are nasty.
You do not want to, like, scrape yourself on that unless you've had all your shots and maybe even not then.
Yeah, exactly. And then some.
Oh, God, it's so gross.
Yeah. So where do we start with this lovely image?
Ugh. Ugh.
Well, the swords are rusty and... rust is Mars, iron, you know, iron rust. They look pretty jagged.
They're broken a little bit, right?
They're chipped and jaggedy, which all to do all the more damage if they, it's not, won't be a clean cut, you know what I mean?
Right, you're going to get an infection right, if you get cut.
Right. Yeah. And then there's those drops of poison. See, it's that start at the top of the card. Mm-hmm. They're the lighter, like serum-y colored drops. One thing Michael Osiris Snuffin's book, he pointed out that I thought was interesting is that where the poison drops end, the blood drops begin.
Oh, really?
He said something like, the poison is the cruelty leading to the pain shown by the blood.
Oh, I see. So are the white drops the poison?
Yeah.
I got you. So there are white drops around and between and above the swords.
And right where they end, that's where the blood begins.
When I used to read this card, I didn't know about the poison.
Cruelty leading to pain.
Yeah, and it bothered me a lot less when it just seemed like blood, you know? Because blood is something that happens, but right. That shows they really meant it.
Premeditated murder.
Yeah.
Red rum.
Oh, God. Thanks for putting that image in my head.
Crowley calls the card Agony of Mind. It's a card of psychopaths and fanatics. Like we said already, the automatic string of heartless passions.
Right.
One thing that he said that made me laugh was the logic of lunatics and, for the most part, of philosophers.
Tell it like it is, man.
The other thing that he references, first thing, there's a quote. He says something like, this card is the instinctive consciousness that nothing can lead anywhere.
Oh, God, that's
And
so
I guess
sad.
It can if the 10 is what's next.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The other thing he references that's pretty interesting is a poem called The City of Dreadful Night.
Did you Google it? I Googled
it, too. It's pretty bleak and nasty poem.
It is.
It's like a curse on life.
Yeah. I took a small quote from it because I thought it was so interesting.
I put a quote in my book about it, too, because it's just, like, so descriptive. I can see why he picked it.
Exactly. As I came through the desert, there it was. As I came through the desert, all was black. In heaven, no single star. On earth, no track. A brooding hush without a star or note. The air so thick it clotted in my throat. And thus for hours, then some enormous things swooped past with savage cries and clanking wings. Mm. But I strode on austere. No hope could have no fear. Hear no fear.
Hear no fear.
There you go. Exactly. Which one? Is that the quote you took?
The quote I took is, let me find it. It was another equally wonderful, uplifting quote.
Another stanza, probably.
My soul hath bled for you these sunless years, with bitter blood drops running down like tears.
Ooh.
Oh, dark, 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 withdrawn from joy and light. And then it continues later on in the poem. There is no God, no fiend with names divine, made us and tortures us. If we must pine, it is to satiate no being's gall. It was the dark delusion of a dream, that living person conscious and supreme, whom we must curse for cursing us with life. And then it goes on to, it curses the life that we must endure if we cannot die from poison or the knife.
Good attitude.
Not recommended.
A for F.
Binge drinking reading.
Seriously. Seriously. Stay away from the substances if you read that one.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
It's quite a bleak poem.
Yeah.
The guy must have been quite a state to write that.
Yeah, seriously. And
James B.V. Thompson.
Yeah. I don't think they
Poor
had
guy.
Wellbutrin then. The acrimonious taint of analysis.
You know, the other thing that Crowley said about this card is, he says, there is a way of dealing with this card, the way of passive resistance, resignation, the acceptance of martyrdom, nor is an alien formula that of implacable revenge.
Yeah, that's an interesting statement, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so either just accept it and be resigned to it and go through it, or, you know, you could go the other way.
Consciousness in a realm unenlightened by reason. So it's almost like, this is the contrast of the sun and the moon, the 6 and the 9, the Tiferet and Yesod.
Yeah,
the light of Tiferet's not reaching it.
He also calls it, like, reason divorced from reality.
Yeah.
So that's the Yesod moon, that...
The dark side of the... And you see a lot of that in the moon card of the Thoth deck, the poison,
the
serum, droplets.
Yeah, the drops of impure blood.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Right.
It's definitely a dark night of the soul card.
Sure is. Unconscious primitive instincts. I'm just pulled up my old notes on the tower card because I wanted to look at the Hellmouth a little bit. Yeah, the jaws of Dis. That's right.
Yeah.
Belching flame.
Yep.
Dis, the underworld god who is like Hades. So
where we get the word discord.
Discord. So there's definitely something about... You know, if you think about the Hebrew letter pei for mouth in the tower card, and then the Hebrew letter zayin for sword.
The sword swallower.
The sword swallower, right? There's something about that here. Or like the idea that swords can come out of your mouth or go in them, you know,
cutting words. The power of words.
Yeah.
Words are powerful. They do create your reality.
They do.
I have had the problem for a long time of finding myself getting into a real negative space, and you got to reframe that crap, you know?
It's really hard to do. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You got to take control and use your free will and just say, no, I'm gonna word this differently.
Right. I'm looking at the jaws of Dis on the tower card in Thoth, and just like the amount of flame spewing out is uncontrollable. Like sometimes it's just really hard to control what's coming out of there.
Yeah.
And it
the
can.
The regurgitation of blah when you're upset.
Exactly.
So that poem was The City of Dreadful Night.
Dreadful Night.
Lays it on pretty thick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I may have told this story before of the, I'm sure I have, of the dream where I was being chased. And so I was being chased. Yeah. I just bring it up because this is a card of nightmares and there is no other. But I had a lucid dream where I was being chased, which was a very typical dream for me. And I've had a moment where I was able to say, I'm going to turn around. And I was absolutely terrified. I didn't want to do it, but I turned around and I faced my pursuer and I looked at them and they were just some ordinary person. They didn't look scary at all. They just like looked like some poor schlep who, you know, poor schmo who was just had a job to do. And I said, what do you want? And the guy just looked at me and shrugged and he said, I don't know. and he walked away. And but after that, I no longer had that dream. To me, that is the solution for the nightmare, right? Is to turn around and deal with it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the message of this card, to face it head on. And
if you can.
Right.
You know, if you can. It's not always possible.
Oh, then there's, what, 36 Faces, Austin Coppock. Remember we were talking earlier before recording about Cybele?
Cybele.
Yeah.
We looked up the pronunciation just for you guys.
Yeah, because otherwise we would have got it wrong.
I mean, who would think? Uh-huh. Cybele. Also connected with the Titaness Rhea. So her story's a really interesting one. She was born hermaphroditic, right?
Yep.
But we call her she because she didn't end up hermaphroditic. What was the cause of the upset?
I think the people were jealous of her
gifts.
Of her gifts and her powers, and so they castrated her. Cruelty.
Cruelty. So the parts fell in a river. A nymph ate. Hold on a sec. I don't think she ate the parts.
It grew an almond tree or something, and the nymph ate the almonds and bore Attis, who became Cybele's lover.
Right, because it was her own
other half
to her as the other.
Her male half, yep.
Right.
Her twin flame.
So it was kind of a happy ending. Right.
Oh, and it got put back.
You know, we've been talking about Castor and Pollux and Cain and Abel, and I think there's maybe a message in the difference between those two stories about how to handle your darker feelings, right? In both cases, you have a death in both stories, but in the Cain and Abel story, it's Cain who slays Abel and is punished through generations to come because of that.
Yeah, but he gets to live and passes genes on into all of us.
That's why we're also screwed up, I guess.
Thanks, God.
but Castor and Pollux, you know, Castor dies, but Pollux, the Dark One, instead chooses to share his immortality as a gift. So, you know, there might be some sort of lesson in that of appreciating what you've chosen as your final path, right? And making the most of it,
right?
You know, honoring the things that had to be pruned away or lopped off or, as the case may be, killed.
Glass half full.
Right. In order for you to carry on and survive.
Yeah.
Right. I like the Greek myth better because, you know, it shows that a person, it's not that Pollux was responsible for his death, but he took responsibility for it and said, I'm going to rectify it this way. Whereas instead in the Christian myth, you have someone who's just guilty and is going to take that forward for the rest of his days. Sorry. <laughs> You know? <laughs> That's not constructive.
Sing it.
And then we have, so color-wise, there's a, it picks up on the warm tones of the Tower and the Lover's card, the Thoth Nine of Swords. But I was always really interested in the background of that, you know? Because it's not like any other. You can imagine it being sort of like a dirty concrete wall in a urban blight neighborhood, right?
You know? Yeah, it looks dirty.
And scary and sort of like unclean.
It's like the dungeon, the torture chamber.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's sort of like, not only is there neglect, but there's cruelty, and the neglect is part of the cruelty. It's like, to create the conditions for someone to thrive and live takes effort, and that effort is not only taken away, but they're actively trying to hurt you. Oh, it's so mean. All right, anyway.
Yes.
So, onto skewered pork. Yeah, tabula mundi.
Yeah, so, you know, the boar's head is from the Tower, because my Tower card has a boar's head mouth at the base of the Tower as the opening into the Tower. So again, we have pay, mouth, and...
And isn't the boar associated with Aries?
Yeah.
Generally,
so that's... Aries,
yeah.
Mars and Aries, the Caledonian boar, one of the correspondences in 777. Yeah, so that boar is pretty much screaming in rage and pain. It's the mental anguish. Interestingly enough, I also have a mouth in the Nine of Swords in Rosetta. The Rosetta, the nine swords are like teeth of a big mouth, and you're like looking down the throat.
Yeah, that's cool.
Looking down the throat of it.
Yeah.
So in this card you have, from the Lovers, you have the lion with those wings that in the Lovers card are dripping honey. Here are dripping poison instead.
Right. Oh, how sad.
And you've got the swords are embedded in the stone, just like in the Lover's card, except for the one that's embedded in the boar's head. So again, head is a martial Aries type thing. And also this card, there's an act of sacrifice, both in this and the 10, you know? That we've talked about. So then there's that egg, that dark egg, which is again from the Lover's card, but also here and there, it can refer to the Castor and Pollux myth because, you know, Castor and Pollux were born from an egg. The father was Zeus as a swan.
Right. Yeah.
That's why you sometimes see him with that cap on their head that looks like it's the top
of an
egg shell.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cute.
Yeah. It's adorable. But yeah, so that's all about the meanness and mockery of your weak points, you know, whether it's coming from you externally or you're doing it to yourself more often, that self-inflicted pain.
And I think that, like, you know, just to remind folks that if you ever wonder why the Nine of Swords is in some ways worse than the Eight and the Ten, you know, just look at the Tower instead, you know, as opposed to the Fortune and Sun cards.
Right.
That explains it right there. You know, and I think it was because of your card that, you know, when I get the Nine of Swords, a lot of the time I will do the sympathetic magic of making the
kebabs.
Pork kebabs. Yeah. Just because that seems to work, you know.
Hey, you do like, sympathetic magic. There's a lot to
there's
it.
I
do it too.
Oh, yeah.
It's,
it's, and it's sort of like you control the interpretation.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
That's the whole point.
It's like writing the spells for your daily draw. Even if you get the shittiest cards of all, you can reframe that.
You get to choose.
That's a huge message of all the swords, but especially
this one.
This card, you know?
Yeah.
Like how to reframe your thoughts. Back to this, the green, the poison is poison, the poison thoughts. You know, the thoughts are what's poisoned.
Yeah. And where does the green color come from scale wise?
Well, in the Tower, which is one of the cards, the only green is it's like a raid color, bright red, raid, azure, or emerald. It's the emerald of the raid
color. Got you, yeah.
But, you know, when you want to suggest poison, you do a sickly green, you know, that usually gets the message across.
Yeah, and the boar's got green eyes too, right?
Yep.
which I think is interesting because we think of green-eyed envy, and that's one of the feelings that can go along with this
one
card.
One of the negative, and yeah, like Sibylle getting castrated because they were jealous.
Yeah.
And the love triangles.
Yeah, envy really drives fear.
It really does. It's a very destructive emotion. It's not constructive in many ways. The only way it can be is if you look at it, like if you're the one feeling envy, if you look at what it is you're envious about and instead of projecting it outward, say, well, what is it that I can do to be more like that which I desire or want to be like or what I envy?
Or isn't there some way you can feel happy for that person?
Right.
For being like that.
Right, mudita and all that. Yeah.
It's interesting. There's a real connection between this card and the Five of Swords in that way, that envy is being a martial quality and this being a card of Mars because Mars rules the Deccan, but the Five also being a card of Mars because Mars rules the Sephira, Five, Gibora. And perhaps, you know, this illustrates one way that the Five can manifest out in the world when that envy gets out of control.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty much it about the card. Oh, the lion, I should say it's a winged lion because the lovers, it's a union of the white eagle and the red lion.
Yeah.
From the lover's card.
Well, I think it's really interesting that you have the lion in that position because the lion is a solar creature in the position of Tiferet above the nine in the Tree of Life. So it's kind of at the top of the card like that.
And he looks, the expression on his face is very haughty.
Yeah.
You know, like he has no mercy, no pity, you know.
Yeah, he's definitely abusing his office.
Right.
Yep. This is not a lion-hearted lion.
Nope.
This is a pig-hearted lion. What's on top of the lion's head?
It's just the hilt of the sword, but it kind of looks like a fez.
It does kind of look like a fez, And the cracks in the rocks, that's an element from the lovers.
Yeah, it's the element from the lovers, the swords being in the stone. And it's also an element from the tower because the tower card, you see all those cracks in the tower as well.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
And the crack in the boar's skull.
Right. And I always love that just sword in the stone motif generally as a, you know, as a metaphor for choice.
Yeah.
As in the Arthurian legend.
Yep.
Yeah.
Choose to draw the sword from the stone and make the sacrifice.
And not everyone can do it.
Yep.
All right. Let's see. I'm going to pull out my journaling here. You get this one much?
Sometimes.
Yeah. I don't get it quite as much as the eight, but.
Thank God.
Oh, God.
I'd rather get the eight any day.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Yeah. What's it signify for you?
Usually that I need to, you know, reframe the negativity, the negative thoughts, and, you know, turn that stuff around and to have courage and, you know, to accept what you have to deal with in a courageous and positive way in a negative way. Poor me way.
Yeah. When I get this card, I actually often get a migraine because Mars headache, you know.
That sword in the head looks pretty painful.
It's pretty bad. This one, I get this one, and then sword quartz also manifests as headache for me.
Piercing.
Pretty much any sword suit is eligible for that, but it's mostly this one, the 10 and the tower and the court cards. Are my headache cards. I was sick a lot with this. Oh, I had, my son had a really bad day and kicked in a door at one point when I got this card once. And probably the funniest one I ever had was a day that we recorded in June earlier this year. On my way here, I heard an ad about a blood drive. Which seems like a real Mars and, you know,
needles,
swords thing. But generally, you know, I have gotten this card relatively infrequently this year, actually, compared to previous years. So I'll take it.
Yeah.
Shall we sum it up?
Oh, please.
So, once again, it's the Lord of Cruelty and Despair. It is the central card of the Gemini cards where we kill off our options in the process of choice. we had the weighing of those options in the previous card and the results of the choice in the next one.
The sharp tongue of Gemini.
Wasn't there something that Austin said that was really cool about the talisman? He says something so great about the talisman you can make for Mars and Gemini. He says that those born with Mars in this face are often possessed of a cutting cleverness and able to apply their intelligence to a wide variety of arts. They have a capacity for cruelty and a penchant for mockery. A talisman impressed with Mars would quicken the tongue and the mind for strategic purposes. However, when worn, it is likely to reduce empathy and may stress the nervous system, which seems right on.
Yep.
Okay, back to the summary.
Talked again about Castor and Pollux, but especially Pollux's affiliation for poisons.
Yeah, the
affinity with poisons, I should say.
Dripping of serum and poisons and blood. The Tower and the Lovers as associated with the card, and the possibility of reading the final 10 swords as the unspooling of a story about an affair and a guilty conscience, and or the story of the fall from Eden. Ruach and the consumption of the soul by itself.
Psychopaths and fanatics.
Religious self-flagellation.
The bed of nails.
The jawbone of the ass as a weapon to kill the twin.
The logic of lunatics and, for the most part, of philosophers.
That's so good. The threefold law and the way that sorrow returns threefold is cruelty if you push it away. Romeo and Juliet and the sleeping draft.
To deal with Mars, use courage. Alternatively, you can use resignation and just accept.
Yesod is the foundation or imagination, the blueprint for reality. So the ability to change your reality by facing the fears. Hear no fear.
Hear no fear. The mockery of your own or others' weak points.
And, and the other Mars cards being dominion, valor, work, satiety and disappointment, cruelty being the most infamous and violent of all six. I think that's it. Can we be done with the Nine of Swords?
I hope so.
Happy to.
It was a hard one to prep for.
It was.
Because I just kept needing to get away from it.
Yeah, probably a hard one to paint too.
Definitely some resistance going, okay, I don't want to be near this anymore.
Right. Have to say kudos to all of you second Gemini sons and who have learned to live with this card and to fight another day.
Through discipline of thought.
Exactly. Exactly. It takes a person with a remarkable will to know how to deal with this card. And, you know, all our friends in 10 to 19 degrees of Gemini have the opportunity, whether they like it or not, to master that lesson in this life. All right, so we'll be back next week with the thrilling end to this sequence, the Ten of Swords. See you then.